so much betting. My anxiety's gone because I'm not actually present. I'm not there. My parents were shocked about it. In theory, I should have had $70,000 in that account. It took me to what I see as my first rock bottom. And in that darkness, I started to gamble again just to find myself.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to the One Day at a Time podcast. Today's guest is Sean. He's in recovery from a gambling addiction, and he's from Brisbane, Australia. Sean, thank you for joining.
Hey, Rob. Great to be here, mate.
I appreciate it. So let's dive right into it. When was the first time you made a gamble and what was it on?
First time I gambled was when I was 18 and a bit. So in Australia, the legal gambling age is 18. First time I tried to sign up for an account, I was probably 18 and a half at a pub with a mate. We were watching our football teams play that based in England. And I tried to sign up for an account that night. For whatever reason, couldn't do it. And then the next day, finished through with signing up for one of those accounts and then was betting 20 cent, you know, pieces on horse racing and dog racing, which I genuinely knew nothing about. Between that and then probably 4 or 5 weeks later, so from 20 cent bets, I then went and placed a $1,700 bet on a rugby league game, so one of the grand finals. So I sort of look at it that even way back when I was first starting, like gambling has just never been a safe thing for me to do. It's just never been a thing that I've been able to do safely or with any form of control.
So how old are you now?
27, so about to turn 28. Yep.
Okay, so this was about 10 years ago then, give or take, that this was happening. What happened in that first couple weeks to go from 20 cents to $1,700?
Man, I can't remember. So I've sort of had two stages of gambling in my life. This was the first stage that lasted for about a year. And I just don't know. You know, it was something about gambling, whatever relief it gave me that I couldn't figure out at the time. I know now. What I have then come to realize through GA and all that, that I'm sure we'll talk about later, is at that time, my anxiety was terrible. So I had really bad anxiety at the end of high school, and what gambling gave me was an explanation for my anxiety. So up until then, it was, well, I'm really anxious about leaving the house. You know, other than that, I can't put my finger on it. But when I was gambling, I was really anxious too. But I could go, oh, I'm anxious because of my gambling. I'm anxious because of this bet that I've placed or this bet that I've got approaching. And that, yeah. The insanity of that is that's the start of the insanity of my gambling, for sure.
If this story is sounding like you, then smash that subscribe button because we're going to continue to talk about the ways that gambling has impacted Sean's life as well as how it's impacted my life and how you can avoid going down the same path that we did. That's fascinating because so many people will say, I gambled to escape feelings of anxiety. I gambled to be calm, which sounds crazy to someone maybe that isn't hooked to gambling, but it was your justification to anxiety that you were feeling. I've never heard that before. It's really fascinating. It's kind of no wonder that it ramped up so fast. It was the excuse you kind of were looking for, right?
Yeah. I mean, and at points, it has given me such an escape to my anxiety too far, you know, later on where I have just disassociated and been able to disassociate as a result of my gambling and be fully immersed in so much betting that my anxiety's gone because I'm not actually present. I'm not there. And that would then help me to go to places because, yeah, it's taking away that anxiety. But at that point in time, at that really early stage, it was just, hey, this is something that helps me explain my anxiety to myself. And I feel comfort in that, despite it actually doubling my anxiety.
So you said that there's two points in your life, two periods of time in which the gambling was ramping up. This was the first. When did this period come to a close? What happened following that $1,700 bet?
Yeah, so gambled for a full year, give or take. And what then occurred was I had a car crash. I had moved out of my parents' place in my late 18s and was still driving one of their cars. And so I had a car crash that actually wrote off one of my parents' cars. And went back to stay with them for a week to sort of recover from that. And they were like, look, that's fine. You've been working for whatever amount of time now, you'll be able to buy your own car. Like, we forgive you for smashing up our car. And I got caught out. So I had to turn around and say, hey, I know that when I turned 18, you gave me an account with X amount of money in it. and I've been working since I was 14, but I've got $1,000 in my bank account. Which might, you know, understandably, my parents were shocked about. I should have had, and you know, in theory, I should have had $70,000 in that account plus. And that is pretty much what I gambled in that first year at 18. So I got caught out. My parents took over my, you know, finances for a little bit, but I had just gotten into a relationship, and that in itself, with my parents finding out, sort of helped abate the gambling, and for whatever reasons, I just sort of stopped.
During that period of time, were you thinking about gambling at all, or was it just like no longer something that was part of your life?
I did gamble a little bit into that relationship, but it was very sparse, and it was very soon into that relationship that I stopped. But I look back and I see almost addictive behaviors that had come into that relationship and then of, you know, were taking away, and that's why I didn't have to gamble. So we were spending pretty much all of our time together, and I'd go after work, I'd do all that, go over to her place, and we were just spending all this time together. So no, I didn't have to gamble. I did think about the gambling because I was sitting there going, oh, I wish I had, you know, that money that I'd gambled. I wish I had it sitting there. So I was still very much aware of a money figure that I had lost. And I was still caught up on that. But no, I was able to join and have a reasonably healthy relationship for quite a period of time there. So fast forward, COVID hits, and I hit in Australia in Jan 2020. During 2019, I had been working really, really hard and had a holiday coming up. I was going to Japan. So going to Japan. I'm super burnt out from work. It's exhausting, but I'm going, hey, I'll just make it to this holiday. I'd had an engagement fall through with that relationship. So sort of emotionally empty. With that engagement fall through, I had to move churches. So I'm a Christian. And so spiritually empty. Then with COVID hitting, yeah, the burnout was just insane. So that holiday got cancelled. I was still working, but at a much lower amount. So a lot more time just sitting around at home, getting more and more depressed. So I was just really lost in this. A lot of what is my sense of self was in this relationship and getting engaged. And that losing that combined with then just the pure burnout from work, it was just a perfect storm. And through that year of 2020, I didn't realize it, but I was just getting really, really depressed, really low. Didn't understand depression. I understood my anxiety, didn't understand my depression. And I was getting really, really low. And unfortunately, when COVID had hit, I'd pretty much taken the money that I'd gotten back from Japan and put that straight in the stock market. And that is definitely what spurred and started the gambling again, because I thought I was just the smartest guy out there. I'd put X amount in, and at its highs, like later on at its highs, I should have cashed out and been able to sit on 100,000 plus. But what that did then was I suddenly had this massive cash flow as well as work. I had all this time sitting around and I was really, really depressed. What really sparked off that gambling again was getting put on an antidepressant that didn't work for me. I was later diagnosed with ADHD, which also folds into the whole gambling. But at the time I was just depressed. And so the GP that I saw, the doctor, was just like, hey, you know, take this antidepressant. And I got really sick off it. It took me to, I sort of, what I see as my first rock bottom. And in that darkness, I started to gamble again just to find myself. Those tablets had started suicidal ideation. They had started just a lot of thoughts in my head that I was terrified of, and I had no idea how to deal with them. And gambling was that the only thing that I can remember that was stable. You know, work's fallen apart. I've still got my job, but work's fallen apart. Relationships fallen apart. Yes, money's going up. Okay, what can I do with the money? Nothing, because it's COVID. You know, it's what's that one stable thing that I remember? Gambling. And So I don't remember placing the first bet to get back into it, but I certainly remember 2, 3, 4 years later how horrific that got.
Yeah, so I was actually living in Sydney during COVID when it hit in Australia in 2020. I was doing a semester abroad.
Oh, wow. Yep.
And there's a couple things about gambling in Australia that I want to touch on towards the end of this video. But for now, I mean, I can relate to that experience of trying to escape depression, trying to escape these negative feelings by going and gambling. Because that's exactly what I did when I landed back home from COVID. To that extent, an aspect of my gambling, though, was always about trying to win big, to feel like the man or feel like I knew something. In your story, it sounds like it was way more about the emotional aspects of it, the escape aspects of it. Would you say that winning was like a side note in gambling? And it was more about the feeling? Would that be fair to say?
Yeah, definitely. Because, I mean, as I said at the start, I mean, my first major win or loss was not a win. It was a loss. Oh, I don't think I said that, actually. Yeah, it was a loss. So that didn't come through. So from the get-go, you know, I was down 1,700 plus whatever. There's been a little bit of financial stuff in there. Don't get me wrong. Like, I did think at times that I'd be able to claw my way back, that I wouldn't, you know, have to keep struggling with that issue of the financial spot that it had put me in. But no, for all of it, it was just about escaping that, initially escaping that anxiety or explaining that anxiety. And then at this point, it's escaping, okay, well, that, you know, your engagement's fallen through, that relationship's gone, COVID's hitting, your holidays are done, you're burnt out from work, but you're stuck in work because what else do you do? Like, it's COVID and you need money to be doing what you want and that sort of thing. And always about that emotional boost.
As it relates to gambling in Australia, I noticed some differences there compared to gambling in the United States. The first being just how much there was. It was like literally everywhere. Now, you say that the first time that you gambled, you were in a pub with your friend. Was it on one of those TAB machines?
No, it was just on my phone.
Okay.
Yeah, if anything, I almost wish it was on a TAB machine because they're at least a bit more sparse than your phone. But as you said, they are still everywhere. Every pub you go to. I don't know what you guys have in America in terms of your pubs and your restaurants. It's nuts. I've got 2 or 3 pubs nearby me that boast that they're open till 4 a.m. Every single night, not just on a Saturday, not on a Sunday. They're open till 4 a.m. every night. And as I was talking to my uncle about it the other day, I was like, there's no way they're serving food at 2 a.m. There's no way they're allowed to serve alcohol past probably 11 or midnight. The sole reason they are open is to keep this gigantic lot of pokies or slot machines open. Like, and these gaming rooms, I've only been in a couple. These gaming rooms are huge. Like, they will have 50 to 60 machines in most of them.
Yeah. For those that don't know, a TAB machine is basically like a scratch-off ticket machine, but instead of buying scratch-offs, you're placing sports bets. It's like a sports betting terminal. That's the equivalent that I can think of in the US, and that's the closest we can get. Because in all of our bars and pubs outside of Nevada and weird exception in like Oregon, they actually don't have the gambling in the same place as the drinking. Whereas in Australia,
wow.
It's all in and I remember strolling through the streets of the CBD in Sydney, which is like their central business district, basically their downtown, and every single like door was to a bar. And all the first door was like to the slot room, the second was to go to the actual bar. In the actual bar, there was a TAB on every wall. So
yep.
You could just gamble wherever you were. And these were like decently not dive bars. Like these were like regular bars just everywhere. Like Americans are probably thinking, oh, they're in the bad bars, the dive bars. No, they're everywhere in Australia. Can we talk about something real for a minute? If your gambling has started to feel less like fun and more like stress, trust me, you're not alone. Millions of us know what it's like to say, just one more bet, or feel that urge that's really difficult to explain. That's why I'm excited to tell you about Evive, a sponsor of today's video. Think of it as having a recovery companion right in your pocket, someone who actually understands what you're going through. No lectures, no pressure, just practical tools and genuine support when those challenging moments hit. Download Evive now and you'll get guaranteed free access through 2026. Not a trial or a limited version, but the complete platform, completely free. Because Evive believes that everyone deserves access to support that works for them. Download Evive today and take the first step towards changing your relationship to gambling. Evive is only available in select countries.
I mean, and looking at it, I guess, from a cultural perspective, it's we don't really have dive bars. Like, we have some crappy nightclubs. But because we only really have, you know, pulled out for not remembering, but like 8, 9, or 10 major cities. It's just in those, especially in those CBDs, like it is just pubs. Like it's where you would think to take your family for dinner. And Brisbane's very similar. I've been to Sydney and I would argue Sydney is worse. Like I saw a whole lot more in Sydney, but yeah, Brisbane's about the same, one on every street. And I grew up going to pubs for meals. Pubs in Australia are more like a restaurant. Yes, there is a bar there, but there's usually then a second bar where people will drink or they'll sit on like stools and eat, whereas you call it a pub, but you're still down and you're eating at actual tables and getting proper meals. It's just slightly cheaper meals. They were there, like as kids, you see the pokey room. In terms of my parents and my grandparents and what my family was like, I can't blame any of it on them. Because my grandparents and my parents are the type of people that will... My parents put the lotto on every week. Yeah, if they were going to go play the pokies while we were there, they'd very rarely do it. But they go put $2 in, 200 one-cent spins, and then whatever's left over, they take out. So they bet that $2 all the way through and then take out. Even if it's a dollar, they still take it out, which to me is insanity. Especially in the height of my gambling, like that makes no sense.
When problem gamblers look at responsible gamblers, we're like, you guys are so weird.
Yeah.
Like, the point is kind of what I usually think. But one more thing about gambling in Australia, you had mentioned that those pubs, like, they boast that they stay open until 4 a.m.
Yeah.
In Sydney, there was this really strange law called the one punch lockout laws.
Yes.
I don't know if they got around. Okay. So, this law was basically such that all these bars and restaurants had to stop serving alcohol at like 1 or 2, whatever time it was, depending on the day. But one building was allowed to stay open past that point, and they were allowed to serve alcohol. And it was the Star Casino
yep.
in Sydney.
Yep.
And so every night at whatever the cutoff point, all the drunkest people in the city would make the trek over to the Star Casino, which was a 5-minute walk from where I went to school at University of Sydney.
Yeah. And that's the insanity of it. And the one thing I will add about Australian gambling as well is the ads. So I don't know if you notice it watching TV or anything like that, but TV, YouTube, just anything, Facebook, the ads are just insane. So they're constant. They're there all the time. If you're watching sports, you've got constant ads of sports gambling companies and constant drinking ads. I have friends that don't gamble, that have never gambled, and that get constant ads for sports gambling on their devices. And so they just went up after I'd come clean with everything. They were like, how'd you do it? Like, how do you do it? How do you stay clean? Or how did you not go crazy with everything here? And I'm like, well, A, I can tell you that I've stayed clean, but I can't tell you that I didn't go crazy. So, you know, during that all.
And, you know, as bad as it is, I've been told, this is like a pretty common saying here now, that gambling in the US is about 7 years behind gambling in Australia and the UK.
Yeah.
And so the fact that there's any restriction at all on those ads, a US viewer will hear that and say, why is he complaining? So we have the same thing, except there's no restrictions. And basically, there's no real cap on what they can say in those advertisements because they're not regulated as a financial entity. Meaning, if you're a bank and you put out an ad in the US, if you tell people they have a chance to win money by using your bank, you can get sued by the Federal Trade Commission for billions of dollars. If you say that for gambling, they're treated as an entertainment business.
Yep.
And so they have different rules about what they can say. And so all of our ads are like, the best feeling is winning on our casino. Sign up and get $500 free right now. and that's on replay all day. So I know the feeling of those ads for sure. You had discussed that there was two stints of your life in which you were gambling, and the first we had already discussed. The second, you had begun gambling again because of stressors in life, and gambling became that escape, and it kind of just took over. What happened during that second stint, and then what eventually stopped you?
I lost everything. So over 3 to 4 years, I was gambling. It got to a point where I was gambling constantly. It was my first step back into gambling was the day trading. And as I said, the day trading went hand in hand with me, but then going, oh, I have all this spare cash that I can be gambling. And so I gambled so much more than I should have been able to early on. I was really depressed. I was really just trying to escape it because nobody around that could diagnose my depression. They could diagnose the depression and be like, yeah, you're depressed. But there was nothing to say of why. And so I would use gambling to keep escaping. I would gamble so much, you know, by probably the last year or so, I was gambling obscene amounts. I'd be pulling over on the side of the road to be making sure, like I'm driving home. Oh, I'm not going to get there in time for the 11:30 at night soccer games. So I'd be pulling over on the side of the road and then placing the bets on the football matches. So that when I get home, it's like, oh, you know, thank goodness I'm home and I've got something that I can sit here and watch and I can gamble more. Yeah, I went into debt for the first time. And I'm not from a family that knew debt, as in we're not rich, but my parents were just very, very good with their money. So for me to then in my personal life have a credit card, to be going down the route of going to payday loans. And so I had a credit card for the first time in my life, and I was getting cash from that. Which I, you know, didn't even know I could do until I looked into it. Payday loans that I would send my bank information off to, and they'd pay me despite all this gambling they could see. And it got to a point where even the medium shoddy ones were, you know, shutting me, turning away from me. And so I had to go to the really, really shoddy ones where I was paying, you know, like 300 or 400% in interest. So I'd borrow $250 just because this company would allow me to on a Sunday afternoon. Like they were the only company that would. And they would approve it. I'd send it within half an hour. And I did not care what the repercussions were and what I then owed. In the midst of all of this, you know, I was drinking quite heavily to then help cope with the gambling. I was still very depressed, still struggling with suicidal ideation that was really strong from the gambling and you know, the drinking and the losses. And I, yeah, tried to end my life twice in the midst of that. So I tried to end my life twice over the, you know, in the period of about 3 weeks, and not even that stopped me gambling. That's the insanity of it, isn't it? You know, they talk about prison insanity and death. I almost died. I was definitely insane. And I was just lucky enough to not be in a position to be stealing from work or from anything like that, that prison would have come into it at that time. So, you know, I started seeing therapists, started getting help. I was still gambling a lot through this period and was seeing a gambling counselor. I had a mate's dad that reached out to me initially and we'd been meeting up for ages. But at the end of the day, what can they do? You know, I'm sitting there, I'm in tears, I'm talking about suicide, I'm talking about all of this. And then they ask me, okay, well, are you still gambling? And it's like, yeah, like I'm still gambling, I'm still borrowing money. The shame of that was huge and played into my gambling as well. That's what destroyed me, was that shame. So you get lost in that shame of gambling, so you gamble more. I'd stay at home from social events, I'd stay at home from things so I could keep gambling because I felt so shitty about myself that I've got no confidence to go out there and be around people. And what I do for big events like weddings and stuff like that, I had to be gambling at those places so that I had something else to focus on during the event, so that I could detract from, oh, everyone's looking at me, everyone's thinking about me, they know what I've done, they know that I'm, you know, a sweaty, anxious mess. Oh, it's okay. I've got my phone going in my pocket that I can keep turning to and keep you know, focusing on.
You're seeing the gambling counselor, you're talking to your friend's dad. What got you to finally give it up?
Yeah, so even more from that, I went to a Dayhab course. I went to Dayhab, and that was where I could do like a rehab and then go to work in the afternoon. So I'd spend the morning in the Dayhab. And it was quite funny because when I first went to the Dayhab, they said, it's not about gambling, unfortunately. Like it's about substances, including alcohol. And so I went, that's okay. Whatever, I've signed up for it. I'll just sit in, and in my head, I'll just substitute in, you know, gambling where you put alcohol. And within 15 minutes of sitting in that, I was like, I've got an alcohol problem too. But I still was able to sit in those classes and really relate to it on a gambling side of things. But I still didn't have that overwhelming thing hitting. Like I'd leave, we'd go at morning tea, we'd all be sitting outside, and pretty much everybody would be down smoking on their cigarettes or vapes and that sort of thing. And I'd sit there and I'd be like, you know, you guys are in this substance rehab thing or Dayhab, and you're down doing that at half time. And then I just look back at my phone at these bets I was placing. You know, I was just so free to pass on my judgments to them in my own head, of course. And then, yeah, just turn around and be gambling again. So I did Dayhab, came out of that, and, you know, still gambling strongly. And my therapist and I really realized that two things had to change. I had to not just come clean with people, but take off the mask. So I told people that I was gambling, and I had told people that I was losing money and I was in debt. And they knew that because people had loaned me money. But I would make a joke out of it, and I would make jokes about my mental health and all of that to make it seem like I was fine and doing well. And so people would be like, oh, well, you know, he's really struggling, but he seems okay because, you know, he's Sean, he's telling jokes. The other thing was coming clean to my parents. From a financial standpoint, my parents could help me out. You know, it was the shame, again, that held me back. And this was 2 years in the making, was telling my parents. This was, you know, the suicidality and all of that wouldn't have happened had I told them. It was the shame that kept me in that spot, and the shame that kept me gambling so much to try to forget the shame and how low I was feeling. So what really saved me ultimately was two things. It was going to my dad and being like, hey, mate, this is where I'm at and I'm really, really sorry. And to give him credit, those years that I've been like terrified of telling him, he turned around and was like, right, okay, well, what do we have to do? Where are we at? I know you've spoken about it, and I fully agree with giving over your finances to a loved one. For me, that was staggered, and I thought I could still do bits by myself, and it quickly showed me that I couldn't. So I went to dad and obviously had this, and I said, you can take everything, but I still want my debit cards. I still want my card that I get, you know, that I'm spending things on, because I want to keep that secret. I want to still have some form of thing. There was still that ego there. There was still a bit of ego there that had to be knocked down. I still had to be humbled. I cried so much when my dad, you know, helped me out. That was the biggest burden off my shoulders. Within a week, I was gambling again. We signed a form. Australia brought out a form late last year or the year before where you could finally ban yourself from basically any legal gambling companies that Australia had been set up in Australia. You could finally ban yourself from all of those. That was a huge thing as well that helped. But I signed that, you know, cried to dad, did all that, and then immediately did two things. I went, how do I gamble overseas? And how do I turn around to the work bookkeeper and ask her to be paying me a little bit extra on the side? I'm like, take that out of my pay, give that to me on this one because I want to do my taxes differently. Not, oh, I want to hide it from dad. So I still wasn't ready. You know, I wasn't ready to give it all up. I started going to GA and met some amazing people, met some really supportive people. And I still put GA as ultimately the people that saved me, because walking into that room, I had been to 2 years worth of therapy. I thought thought I knew it all. I thought my case was the worst or one of the worst. And I walked in and I expected them to judge me. One of the very first ladies sharing there shared how she just relapsed after a year. Everybody clapped her. You know, they clapped for her and they say congratulations and they said welcome back. That's incredible. Like, A, that this lady would get up and share that much and be so upset. But B, that these people would turn around and still accept her. Like that thought of shame and that thought of people turning around and abandoning me because of my issues was gone walking into those rooms because I saw that happen with that lady. She didn't get any of it. It still took me probably 4 to 6 weeks to be at a point that I was able to go back to my dad and take the courage that I had these people at GA that were going to support me no matter what and go back to my dad and say, hey, I'm really sorry. I've been doing this. I want to give you everything. I want you to take full control at the moment of my finances because I cannot see a way that I can get clean without doing that as a step.
You talk about all four of the pillars that I recommend for people when they're trying to quit gambling. First is finding something to do with their time that means something to them, which that's the last piece I want to ask you about before we wrap up. But then you were turning over the finances to a trusted family member, so you didn't have the temptation.
Yep.
Excluded from the casinos with that national self-exclusion, that national ban from the casinos, and you started going to support group meetings. I mean, this is what recovery is all about.
Yep.
What that period after you stopped, what did you do to pass the time now that you weren't getting that insane stimulation from gambling?
3 months into my sobriety, I was really sick. My brain was frazzled, felt like static everywhere. And I went to hospital, mental hospital, and they diagnosed me with the ADHD. And I had been able to hide that, or my brain had, by the gambling. So by taking that gambling away, I've taken away the 7 different things that my brain's thinking about at once. And it's like, holy crap, now I don't, I don't know what to do. And my brain didn't know what to do. And so going on medication, being in the hospital there for that period of time, was very helpful. And one of the biggest things I did in hospital as soon as I started the meds was I was able to write poetry. And this is not something I was normal at doing. This is not something I had done normally. But this poetry just started flowing out and it's insane. And so I started posting on Instagram and that took up and has taken up a lot of my time is writing this poetry, trying to get better at poetry, trying to get better at explaining myself and things that have happened in my life and really joining in on that poetry community on Instagram. So it's wild to go from, you know, having static in your brain and it's all that and then coming out and being like, yeah, so I've like posted 20 poems on Instagram while I've been away. Has definitely helped me wrestle with my faith, my religion and how I've been able to keep going through the parts that are really hard.
If you guys want to check out some of Sean's poetry, we actually linked it in the description of this video. Go and check it out. Drop him a follow. Show him some love. Sean, thank you so much for joining today and sharing your story. If you're in the audience and you want to hear another story of someone who's recovering from a gambling problem, then check out this video and let's keep getting better together one day at a time.